Today is Monday, March 25th, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. The latest on the deadly terror attack in Russia. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating. You can email us as well, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. Joining me, as always, on this Monday morning to get through the news of the crate, Billy Hallowell. Billy, happy Monday, and you're looking at a pastor and a wife who scored a major victory in Nigeria.
Yeah, this is a rarity. We know that the persecution is raging there in Nigeria, but this husband and wife, they were just essentially exonerated, acquitted of an alleged crime. We'll get into what they were accused of and their freedom now.
All right, looking forward to the details there. On the main thing, Madison Seals is taking a closer look at a Family Research Council report on how prenatal hospice positively impacts women, and in many cases, their unborn child, too. A pro-life update there. And don't forget to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts. If you haven't already, you can do so in the description of this podcast episode. DC Debrief with John Stolness and Newsmakers with Billy Hallowell. Don't miss those. Make sure you're getting those updates each and every day in Newsmakers' case, and once a week for DC Debrief. All right, let's head on over now to the news in 90 seconds. Friday's terror attack in Russia left at least 137 people dead now. Authorities are still working to identify all of the victims. The attack is Russia's deadliest in two decades. All four of the suspects in this concert hall attack have been remanded into pretrial detention until May 22nd. They're charged with committing a terrorist attack, and they could face up to life imprisonment, according to the Russia law code there. And three of the defendants pled guilty to all the charges. All four are from Tajikistan, which is a former Soviet republic, and they'd been in Russia on temporary or expired visas. Vladimir Putin declared Sunday a day of national mourning for the 137 victims. And the Russia embassy has denied that in Washington has denied that it received any warnings about a potential attack in Moscow. The U.S. said they did warn them and that Putin dismissed those warnings. And the U.K. now has warned that Russia was creating a, quote, smokescreen of propaganda around the attack. Reactions have poured in from around the world from leaders following the announcement that Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, had been diagnosed with cancer. A lot of the people were criticizing those who offered conspiracy theories online in regard to her absence from public life. Those are just some of today's top headlines. You can check out those stories and more over at cbnnews.com. And that was fascinating, Billy. This turn of events, first of all, prayers obviously for Kate Middleton and the family there with that horrible news about cancer. But the way the social media, and I feel like this is the poison of social media, were just speculating and all these things were going on about why she wasn't speaking. And then it turns out it's this, and it's kind of one of those moments where you're just like, man, sometimes the internet's the worst.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the whole time I'm thinking, gosh, you know, when you have that level of scrutiny on you, it was very clear that something major was going on, yeah. Right? If somebody's missing from public eye, they've had a surgery, a stomach surgery, you know, it's probably already been serious. And I don't know, to me, it just felt like the vultures were circling, and then to have this be the result of it, I don't know. A lot of people ought to be ashamed of themselves. It's not your right to know everybody's business in their life, you know, everything that's going on just because they're a public figure. So it just kind of felt gross to me. And, you know, of course, everybody is curious. They want to know, but the levels to which people take that, it's pretty heartbreaking. And of course, we don't know how serious it is, but it does sound serious, right? So you got to pray for her and her family. Yeah. These are real people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just one of those reminders of how, as Christians, we should engage on social media. It's very easy to get caught up in all of this stuff. And I think sometimes we forget that X or Facebook or TikTok or whatever other social media you're on, it's not real life, you know? It's just, but people treat it that way. I don't know if you saw it, but over the weekend, Christ the King was trending. And somehow there was this big debate online over whether or not that was anti-Semitic to say that. And I'm watching this and I happily ejected from that scroll on my feed because out here in real life, people just aren't dealing with that sort of thing. I feel like it's one of those controversies that just only exists on social media, and people end up stressing about these things and making more about them than they really need to.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, look, social media should be something that makes people more social, but it makes us more antisocial in many ways. Yeah. And I think that's been, it's a whole other conversation, but we've talked about it on the show before and the impact that it has on us. In real life, people are experiencing, and this is why real life conversations are so important, right? Not getting consumed by all this. So yeah, I think when it comes to celebrity news, people need to maybe take a step back and realize that, again, other people's lives are not your, it's not your right to know every detail that is going on in other people's lives.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, certainly prayers for Kate Middleton and their family there. And all, look, so many people are touched by cancer. And so I'm sure in your neck of the woods, there's something going on with you, with someone you love and someone you know, maybe even you. So all of our prayers for people dealing with that horrible, dreaded disease. So let's move on over now to the focus story. As we mentioned at the top here, we've got a pastor and a wife. They scored a major victory in Nigeria after being acquitted of wrongdoing. So what's the story here?
Yeah, this is a really interesting story. It surrounds the Reverend Jonah Genghis and his wife, Josephine. They scored, as you said, this rare victory. And we've talked a lot about Nigeria. We can get into more of the details after, but this is a country where persecution is absolutely raging. Now, this husband and wife came under fire for apparently taking in a runaway Muslim girl years ago. They allowed her to live with them for about 7 years. And this runaway, she ended up living with them, I guess getting an education. You know, as Christians, they were apparently helping her. We, of course, are only hearing this. It's like telephone. You're only hearing the story through their attorneys because of the nature of it. But they apparently helped her. After she graduated what they would call secondary school, high school, she reunited with her family, who she had run away from. And that is when issues started unfolding. A Muslim organization, because, again, this girl was apparently a Muslim in her family, they, at the behest, I guess, of the family, went and started to take action against this Christian couple who had helped the girl. And that's where this all sort of started. And so this couple, they had spent about 3 years behind bars, essentially, because of this ordeal.
So what is so shocking that stands out about this case?
Yeah, I mean, the shocking thing about this is that this couple, this Christian couple, they go out of their way, they help this girl. They're accused of kidnapping her, right? And they're arrested in 2020. Now, this started in 2013. So this girl, she runs away in 2013. They keep her for 7 years. In 2020, again, she reunites with the family, her family, and they end up under fire. And what is so shocking about the case is that, you get arrested in 2020, you assume, okay, if this were America, at some point, you're going to be able to get a trial. They were in prison for 3 years without bail. So here they are being accused of proselytizing and converting this girl. That's essentially what the crime is, right? That they've been helping her, they've proselytized her and what have you. And so from 2020 until now, it's just now that the High Court of Justice in the Kaduna State in Nigeria has fully acquitted the couple of wrongdoing. And they filed something called a no case motion. And I don't know the ins and outs of everything that means in that country, but what it does mean is that they're no longer going to be held. This couple is going to be released, but it's shocking that you'd be held for 3 years without bail for, converting somebody, essentially. Right. I mean, that's what this seems to be hinged on.
And unbelievable. And what are the attorneys there with ADF International saying?
Yeah, so actually Sean Nelson with ADF International, we just had him on about a week ago to talk about Nigeria, which is interesting. But he said, for simply helping this young girl and taking her in during a moment of need, they were punished, prosecuted, and imprisoned. He said they were pleased that the court has sided with the Reverend and his wife and that they hope the decision will positively impact other Christians and religious minorities in the country who are being unjustly punished for their faith. So they're hoping that, I mean, this is a rare victory in a country where it's split Muslim Christian, but where things are really dire for Christians right now. So it's almost shocking that the two of them, you know, you asked what was shocking, that the two of them are even getting off at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And that's definitely a praise. So what is happening in Nigeria right now, more generally on a wider scale to Christians?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much going on. We covered back in 2022 the stoning of a Christian college student, and that really, I think, opened the floodgates to international coverage on this. But we've probably done a Nigeria story at CBN News every other week at this point, I feel like. I mean, abductions, murders, killings, land grabs. I mean, Christians are, again, this is a Muslim Christian country. It's split. It's not as though Christians are 2% of the country or 10%. They're almost 50% of the country. And yet the northern region, especially of Nigeria, is overrun and overtaken by radical Muslim extremists. And the police do not uphold the rights. I mean, there's constitutional religious freedom rights, essentially, for people in Nigeria. Those are not upheld. And so it's complete chaos. We just covered a story the other day with Sean Nelson, the attorney in this case, where he was describing how two colleges, a federal and a state college, they reportedly ban Christians from being able to worship at all at these colleges, while Muslims are able to worship freely. They've locked the Christians out. And so that's daily life in Nigeria for Christians now. It is really, really shocking. More than 82% of the Christians killed across the globe for their faith were actually in Nigeria. So that's wow. How bad it is right now.
Yeah, really unbelievable. And again, you know, as we've said on this podcast, tough to fathom, right? That sort of level of persecution. But our brothers and sisters in Christ are definitely dealing with the brunt of it there in Nigeria. So appreciate you bringing the details on that one on the podcast today, Billy. And with that, and our prayers being with them, we are going to head over to the main thing now. And a new report from the Family Research Council analyzes the experience of women who received perinatal hospice care after a diagnosis that their preborn child had a life-limiting condition. And one of the report's authors, Mary Zoke, talked to Madison Seals about how perinatal hospice positively impacts women and, in many cases, their unborn child too. That's today's main thing.
Many people probably aren't familiar with the term perinatal hospice, so let's start with that. Can you explain what it is and who it's for?
Perinatal hospice programs around the country are all unique, and they provide a variety of different services, but in general, perinatal hospice programs are meant to support couples who have received an adverse prenatal diagnosis. So they have found out that their child has some sort of fetal anomaly or what physicians sometimes refer to as a life-limiting condition, and that their child might die at some point shortly after birth or before birth. And what perinatal hospice programs do is they provide support to women and their husbands in these situations. So they provide counseling, sometimes extra sonograms, photos or mementos, prayer, support groups, a birth plan that includes alleviating any potential pain that the unborn child might feel, a burial or funeral plan, and a memorial service. And what we found is that couples who receive perinatal hospice services are overwhelmingly grateful and satisfied with the experience that they had with them. They are able to see the good that has come from their child's life.
And this report that Family Research Council published and that you worked on analyzes these experiences of pregnant women who receive this diagnosis for their child. How common is this diagnosis?
One of the challenges of testing for an adverse prenatal condition is that it is so rare, and that a lot of the time the screening for these conditions is inaccurate. So one of the things that we have found is that parents receive a positive prenatal screening for one of these conditions a significantly greater portion of the time than the child actually has one. So the New York Times did an expose on these non-invasive prenatal tests, and they found that 85% of the time, actually, these prenatal screenings are inaccurate. That's kind of a crazy high number. But what we are talking about, it doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter whether the tests are accurate or not. What matters is that there's a baby there, and that baby has dignity and worth, and that baby's life has value.
And what is the typical demographic of women who choose to seek counseling and medical care for this?
So what we found with perinatal hospice is that the women who we surveyed tended to be married, white, religious, and to have above average incomes. And so what we know about the abortion industry is that that's not the subset of women that they target. Women that they target for abortion are overwhelmingly poor and minority women. And so what we're seeing here is that there needs to be more awareness spread about perinatal hospice so that it's not just women who are white, above average income, and married and religious who receive perinatal hospice services, but that it's all women who find themselves in this challenging situation.
Just to echo that, this is a difficult diagnosis, to say the least, for the parents and the child, for the obvious reason that the child may not survive. But it's also a difficult period in a woman's life anyway, when they're already going through the hormonal changes and exhaustion of growing a human being inside of them, not to mention the stress of knowing that their baby may not make it to or through birth. So what advice and recommendations do healthcare providers give to these women after a diagnosis like this?
Well, we found that the majority of women, when they received their child's diagnosis, their doctor also recommended that they abort. And we found that at that point in time, only 19% of women were also told about perinatal hospice programs. So that's a really challenging situation for a mom to be in. We know that many couples who receive this information experience the diagnosis as a traumatic event. And then on top of that traumatic event, a physician is there telling them that the compassionate thing to do is to kill their unborn child. And so we really need a complete change in the mindset of our medical community here, one where they're promoting actual compassion, which means to walk with someone who is suffering. Now, the couple is certainly going through an immense amount of suffering, but there can be beauty in that. And that's what perinatal hospice helps people to see.
Yeah, and this report also discusses those experiences of pregnant women who choose perinatal hospice. So can you expound upon how their pregnancies and experiences are affected?
Certainly. So over 60% of the women who worked with perinatal hospice talked about how the perinatal hospice influenced their decision to carry their child to term in some way. And we had an overwhelming percentage of women say that there was nothing that they could find negative about the perinatal hospice services that they were offered. Over 83% said that the perinatal hospice was very supportive, and 67% said that the perinatal hospice was very helpful for them in the grieving process. The thing that women found the most helpful from perinatal hospice were the photos or mementos that were passed along to them. And this is something that I think we really need to be focusing on, that the support and love that these women needed during this very challenging time, it wasn't something that was extremely costly. It wasn't something that required, you know, an astronomical amount of effort. It was just people being there and taking a photo or giving a memento that helped this couple to memorialize their child's life and that helped acknowledge the fact that their child's life made a difference in this world.
Yeah, and that just, it makes me think of hospice care for the elderly or any other human being who receives a terminally ill diagnosis, that we would seek the same things for them, to make them comfortable, to, you know, share pictures from their life. And if they do end up passing on, to memorialize their life, celebrate and grieve with their family. But of course, that's recognizing that this is indeed a human being. And I feel like that's where the pro-life movement comes into this topic. And why is this an important topic for the pro-life movement to talk about? And how do you think that they should talk about it?
This is defending the most vulnerable of the most vulnerable among us, right? And this is, these are the people who are constantly brushed aside by society, even when they're outside the womb. I have an older sister who has physical and intellectual disabilities, and she is often forgotten or left out. And so as members of the pro-life movement, we cannot forget or leave behind the babies in the womb who have disabilities, because it does have an eternal impact. Those lives do have worth, and they're here for a reason. Our job is to stand up and defend them.
All right, Madison, thanks for that conversation there. Very interesting stuff, Billy. I had not really heard much about this care at all before. It's very, very, very fascinating.
No, and it's good for people to know that this exists, right? It's sad that we don't know. I mean, if you and yeah. I, we cover this stuff, we see this stuff all the time, that we don't know about it. I'm glad we were able to cover it and let people know it exists.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. That's going to leave us with time on the podcast today for one last thing.
1 Peter 3:14, but even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened. And that is a verse that just reminds me of Nigeria and what we were talking about there. Just, you know, even in suffering, you can still find power and peace in Christ.
Yeah, it reminds us to have that eternal perspective. And that's the only way, really, through the grace of God, that we can face these sorts of trials and persecutions that might come our way in whatever shape or form they may take. All right. That's going to leave us for the podcast today. As always, get on over to cbnnews.com, faithwire.com for more. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise, we shall return tomorrow. God bless. See you then.